We pick up on 49b with a quote from the Mishnah, Mem Tet Amud Bet, quoting from the Mishnah, V'chein Mishiyatza, a person that comes out of Jerusalem and he remembers that he has sacrificial meat, he has to go back to Jerusalem if he has not passed a place called Tzofim. And he goes back in, and there was a machloket in terms of that, also how much chametz you have at home. And Rabbi Meir had said, in both of those situations, you have to go back for a kibbutz, an egg amount. And Rabbi Yehuda had said, no, an olive amount. So now the Gemara discusses this. L'maimram, to Rabbi Meir, Sava kibbutz, hu dechashuv. Is it really so that Rabbi Meir holds that an egg amount is defined as significant? Rabbi Yehuda Savar Kazait Nami Chashuv, and Rabbi Yehuda holds that even an olive amount is defined as significant. Rumini, we have a challenge to that from a Mishnah in Brachot. Ad Kama Heim Mezamnin, how much do you have to have, i.e. to bench, and if you're with people, three people, 10 people, whatever the case is, we saw this in Brachot, how much would you need to, how many people would you have to gather together with in terms of not splitting, how many people were you not allowed to split apart once you've defined as eating a meal in terms of that? In other words, the amount that you would have to have a mizimun, ad kazait, that is ad kazait, the anonymous opinion in the Mishnah, which is then often attributed to Rabbi Meir. So according to this, Rabbi Meir says a kazait. Rabbi Yehuda Meir ad kibbutz, Rabbi Yehuda says a kibbutz. So that is the contradiction in Brachot. The Rabbi Meir seems to say just an olive, and Rabbi Yehuda seems to say an egg amount. So the first answer, I'm Rav Yochanan, Mechulefet Hashita. Switch around the opinion that we have and make them the same. I, Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Yehuda have to be switched around. Not quite sure exactly which way you'd have to do that, whether it's Brachot that you'd have to switch around to conform with our Mishnah. Maybe that would seemingly be the situation, but we're not quite sure as to why it wouldn't necessarily be the other way around. In any case, Abaya says not necessarily. Lo lam lo tepuch. No, you don't have to switch it around. They maintain the position, and the contradiction is resolved as follows. Why? Hatam b'krei krei peligi. In terms of brachot, they're arguing about psukim, different verses. Hacha b'svara peligi. Whereas here, they are talking about it's a logical issue. They're talking about the amount of thing that is defined as significance in its own place. Hatam b'krei pligi, in terms of making a brocha and making a zimun, they're arguing about the pasuk. Rabbi Meir says, what's the pasuk for benching? He says, v'chalta v'savatu v'rachta. He says, v'chalta zu achila. When you eat, it means just eating. V'savata, and you are satisfied. He says, zu shtia, that is drinking. And it means that you have to eat and drink. And he says, "Vachila kazait." How much is just eating? He says, "Achila, eating is just a kazait amount. That's defined, the minimum amount that you have to eat. So therefore, he says, for benching purposes, it is only a kazait. Rabbi Yehuda Savar. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Vachalta v'savata." He says those are both you've eaten and you are satisfied. Achila shiyesh bo sviya. That is eating the amount of food that will make you full. Va'ezihu kibbutz, that is a kibbutz size, and an olive amount of food. Okay, so that is the how we explain what brachot is about, the machloket in brachot. Hacha besvara pligi, but here in Pesachim they're arguing about a svara, logic. The Rabbi Meir savar chazarto kutumato. He says you have to go back for something, the amount of thing that would result in something being able to transmit tumah, and that's it. My tumah to kibbutz, the minimum amount of size for something to be able to transmit tumah is an egg size. Anything smaller than that can't transmit tumah. There's a machloket whether it can receive tumah. You know, maybe even a smaller, tiny amount can receive tumah. But in order to transmit it, that is only an exile's worth of it. Afkazrat kibbutzah. So he says. So too, returning for it, whether it's the meat or the chametz, that would be an exile's. Rabbi Huda says no. Chazrato kisuro. He says you have to return for the amount that you are punished for in terms of its prohibition. Its prohibition is only when it is a kazait of chametz or sacrificial meat. Af kazrato bekazait, and he says that that's why you return for a kazait. So we can understand their opinion in Pesachim. We can understand their opinion now in Brachot. Tana, Rabbi Natan Omer, he says, Zeh v'zeh k'shteig beitzim. He says, no, you would for two egg worths, both for chametz as for sacrificial meat. V'lo hodu lo chachamim. That is not accepted by the rabbis. And now, once we talk about leaving Jerusalem, we quote various pesukim from Zechariah, three different pesukim from Zechariah. Avaya b'yomahu lo yiye or yikarot b'kippa on. It says on that day there won't be light, but there will be these thick clouds and heavy clouds and thickness. Okay, that's what it means. Ma yikarot v'kippa on. What exactly do these yikarot v'kippa on mean? So the simple meaning is, as we explained, but the Gemara is going to give three different explanations. Am Rabbi Elazar, he says, Zu Or, he says that is the light by the sun, she yakar b'olam hazeh, that is important in this world and defined as significant and bright in this world, v'kafu l'amaba, and will be unimportant in the world to come. The moon is going to shine as brightly as the sun, and it says the sun is even going to be seven times stronger than it is at the moment. So therefore, it's the light of the sun, even though we think that's very light today, it will even be seven times brighter, and the moon will be as bright as the sun. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, second understanding, Elu Negaim V'Oalot. These are the tractates of Negaim and O'alot. It says, Yukirin Hain Balamaze. They are very heavy and important, really, in this world. They're very hard to understand. Kipayon Haim L'Olam Haba. They'll be much easier in Olam Haba, where there'll be much more Torah knowledge, etc. People will be much cleverer. That is second understanding. Rabbi Shua ben Levi Amar. Rabbi Shua ben Levi says as follows. He says, Eilu ben Adam, Shukarin Haim Balam Hazeh, V'kipayon Haim L'Olam Haba. These are people that are important in this world, and they'll become much less important in the world to come. And what does that mean? Kiada Rav Yosef, Breda Rav Yosef ben Levi, Liz Lak Rav Yosef, the son of Rav Yosef ben Levi, Chalash. He was very sick of it, Nagid, right? He was just about to pass away. He was hovering between life and death. It seems that he had a bit of a near-death experience and stuff like that. But then he comes back and recovers. Kihadar, when he comes back, Amalu Avua, so his father said to him, Ma Chazita, what did you see? Amalai, Olam Hafokreiti, he said, I saw an upside down world in Olam Haba. Elyonim Lamata, Vetachtonim Lamala, the people that are up in this world, rich, powerful, important people, they are very lowly in that world. And the people that are very lowly in this world, the poor, the downtrodden, etc., they'll be the ones in Olam Haba that will be above everyone. It would seem that an understanding of this is that if a person's very attached to physicality, that's not going to stand him in good stead for Olam Haba. Whereas if a person is much more interested, not that focused on physicality, then they will be much more attuned to Olam Haba. Okay, that's the one understanding. He says, Amalo, Bini, my son, or Olam Barur Ra'ita, you actually didn't see an upside down world, you saw a clear world. That's exactly how it should be, because that is really where people get their rewards for things that they've done. Vanan, he says, and us, Heichi Hatam, he says, how are we over there? I.e., Torah. Scholars, Tamid Hakamim, Kiyaki, the Atu Anan, Hacha, Haki, Inun Hatam. He says, just as we are here, so are we there. In other words, we are respected in both worlds. Or obviously, Olam Abba, the Torah is paramount over there. You're close to Hashem, and Hashem has revealed himself through Torah. So if you involve yourself with Torah in this world, so you'll be close by definition to Hashem in the world to come, because that is the essence of Hashem. So you're becoming, you're close in this world, you'll be close in the next world. Interesting in terms of the underlying question, what did he think, that the Torah scholars, even though they're respected in this world, are going to be suddenly denigrated in the world to come? So it's in terms of understanding that, what it really might mean is that he means that it can be that a student or someone that doesn't seem to be that great in this world, he says, is in a higher level than his teacher in Olam Haba, and that is really all to do with not your ability, your knowledge, etc. It's what you do with that. It's your effort and your energy, your gear, your toil in Torah. He says that is the thing that defines you. Anu amelim v'heim amelim. We everyone's in terms of amelut, but Torah. He says that is what is important, and that's why if you exert yourself in this world, then you'll be recognized in Olam Haba as well. All right, so that's what an understanding of that means. Veshamati shehayu amrim, and I heard them say, Ashrei mi sheba lekan v'talmudo biado. It's happy and I heard them say, happy is one who comes here and he's got his Talmud in his hand. Also a number of different explanations over here. One of them is that you know something well, so if you are able to go over something and you know it well, and you arrive, that's very good. If you revise what you've got, so that you retain a lot of your learning, or at least whatever you can of your learning, that is a good thing for Olam Haba. But Shemati, and I also heard, he says, Shayom Rim Haruga Malchut Ein Adam Yachol Lamod B'Mechit Satan. Those people that are executed, Al Kiddush Hashem, he says, by the government, they are such a high level that no one can stand in their Mechitza, no one can stand in their little area in Olam Haba. So, who are we talking about here? Elam Rabbi Akiva v'chaveirav. Are we talking about Rabbi Akiva and his and the 10 martyrs that we discuss on Yom Kippur and in Tisha B'Av, the Kinot and the Slichot on Yom Kippur? Obviously Mishum Haruga Malchut v'tulo. Is it only because they were killed by the government and nothing else? Obviously they were saintly people, Rabbi Akiva, spreading Torah and massive teachers, etc. So it wasn't just because of that that they get such a high status. Ella Haruga Lud. We are talking about Haruga and Haruga Lud. So the Gemara in Tanit talks about this. These two people, Papus and Lunianus. There was a decree that the king's daughter was found dead, and they wanted to blame it on the Jews, and they wanted to wipe out the whole community. And what happens is these two, I think they were brothers, Pappas and Lulianus, they falsely admitted to killing the king's daughter, and they got killed so that they could save the whole of the Jewish people, or the whole of the community at least at in that place, and therefore so it's those people, Papas and Runianos, you know, who Rabbi Perez always used to discuss, that they didn't have exactly, you know, these are foreign names, they weren't exactly you know, Avram and Yitzchak over here, it's Papas and Runianos, so they were probably very assimilated, or you know, ingratiated in the culture. They weren't known for their piety. However, that the fact that they got killed, Al Kiddush Hashem, and saved the Jewish people, meant that their mechitza, standing in their mechitza, no one's going to be able to stand in their mechitza in Olam Haba. Okay, second verse from Zechariah, famous voice. Not the famous one. We're coming up to the famous one. That will be the third one. This is the second. On that day, it says, "Yeah, call a mitzalot asus kodesh Hashem." The bells on the horses, it says, will be holy to Hashem. Ma mitzalot asus. What do you mean, the bells on the horses? Mitzalot asus. It says, "Amar Rav Yoshua ben Levi." Hashem is going to extend Jerusalem by as far as a horse can run, the whole time that it actually has a shadow. In other words, if the horse can run, you know, from the morning when it starts casting a little shadow, until midday when the shadow is underneath it that no longer has a shadow. So that's how wide Jerusalem is going to be. If the horse can't even, won't be able to get across it, even if it gallops from morning till noon. Okay, that's the size of Jerusalem, and that is also why we bring this here. That's the connection, as we mentioned, with the size of Jerusalem. We mentioned how far do you have to go back if you've got parts of him or not. So here we see that's what we are talking about here. Rabbi Elazar says, call mitzilot shutulin lasus. All these bells that if you hang on a losus, a bein enav, between its eyes, yeah, kodesh Hashem, they will become holy to Hashem. They'll be sanctified to Hashem. They'll be given over to the Beit HaMikdash, you know, and as presents. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, third view, ko biza shbizyon Israel ad sha asus ratzu matzil. All the spoils, that the Jewish people have taken from the non-Jews that will fight against them, it says, as far as horse can run and cast the shadow, in other words, half a day, yeah, Kodesh Hashem, will also be holy for Hashem. So we've had these three different explanations, you know, the distance of Jerusalem, and the ornaments on a horse, and also the spoils of the Jewish people. So it says, Bishlam Elamand Amar Kobiza Shabazu Yisrael, the third explanation, all the spoils that the Jewish people take, Hanetiktiv, Vaya Hasirot, Bevet Hashem, Mizrakim, Livna Mizbach. It says, the pots in the Lord's house shall be like the basins before the altar. Okay, so you can understand that it's part of the spoils. Ella, Mand Amar, Bahanach Tate, according to the other one that says, these other two things, what are we talking about? Maya Hasirot Bevet Hashem. What do you mean, the pots in Hashem's house? It says, no, that is talking about Milta Achriti Kamar. That is something else altogether. Demit Arti Yisrael Mit Nadvi Umaiti. It says that in future the Jewish people will become wealthy, and therefore they're going to bring these things to the altar. The Jews are going to become rich and therefore donate a lot more to the Beit HaMikdash. And now we try again. Bishlamad Amanda Amar Biza, the one that also says that there's talking about spoils, Hanetiktiv, Velo Ye Knani, Od Beveit Hashem, Tzvakot. There won't be a Knani, which we're going to define as a merchant, not a Canaanite, but a merchant. We'll see why in a second. There'll be no need for him to be there, for people to buy things and think that people will be rich, so they'll have all their own things. And so therefore, because they've got all the spoils of war, Ella Namandama, Hanach Tate, the other two understandings, what does that mean? Maya Veloye Knani, there's no Knani. I'm Rav Yirmiyah, Ein Kan Ani. the Jewish people will be rich, and therefore Ein Kanani is mean Ein Kan. There is not here an Ani. There is no people that are poor anymore. So therefore, because the Jewish people are going to be rich, they'll be able to donate whatever they need. And now, what we said before, Kanani minaland ikre tagar. Why do we know that a merchant is called a Kanani? Diktiv avira sham yuda bat ish Kanani. And it says Judah saw the daughter of this Kanani man, and he married her. This is talking about, he married her off to his wife, and from that came out his sons Aaron or Nun, and eventually they got married to Tamar. The whole story with that. So he was the merchant. Anyway, he took this daughter of Shua. Anyway, my Kanani, what are we talking about? And Kanani, Ilam Kanani Mamish, if you really say that he took a daughter of a Canaanite man, it says, Efshar Ba Avram, he's here at Yitzchak. Is it really so that Avram warned Yitzchak not to marry a Canaanite woman, and he sent Eliezer back to get Rivka by Yitzchak, because here at Yaakov, and Yitzchak warned Yaakov, he sent him to Lavan to go get a wife there. It says Yehuda Azel Vanasiv, would Yehuda really go and take a Canaanite woman? Ella Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Rash Lakish says, but Gavra Tagara, and he says this is talking about a merchant, the daughter of a merchant. And how do we know that? Tiktiv Kanan Do Mozne Mirma. He says this, the merchant, he's got these scales of deceit in his hands, pasuk from Hosea. So therefore we see it's a businessman, a merchant. Vibatayim, another proof, it says, Mehacha, from here, Asher Sochareha Sarim Kananea Nikvedei Aretz, whose traders are princes and merchants are honorable of the earth, pasuk in Isaiah. Talking about the people from Tyre. Okay, so we see from there that these are a Kanani is a merchant. A third pasuk, a famous pasuk, Vayabi Omahu, Raya Hashem, Namelech HaKol Aretz, Boyomi Hashem Echad, Vishmo Echad. The pasuk says on that day Hashem will be king on all the earth, and on that day Hashem will be one, and his name will be one. So the Gemara immediately questions this. Ato idna alav echad, who are you saying today that Hashem is not one? Obviously Hashem is one even today. So how do we understand this? And the answer is in terms of that. So we say it says Amar Rav Achabar Chanina. He says the following law Kolamaze Ramaba. This world is not like the next world. Olamaze Abasrot Tovot. Omer, on good news, we say Baruch Atov Meitiv. If something good happens to us, we say that blessing, as recorded the ninth chapter of Brachot, blesses who is good and does good. It says, and Al Basarot Raot, and on evil news, on bad tidings, we say Omer Baruch Dein Amet. We say, blessed are you, the true judge. So that is that. L'olam haba kulo hatov metiv. In the world to come, we will always say one blessing. We'll recognize that whatever is done that is for our good, and we'll understand even the sufferings, the supposed sufferings that we've had, all the actual sufferings, etc., we'll understand the need for all of them, and we'll see the bigger picture, which is we can't where we are at the moment. Okay, Ushmo Echad, and his name will be one. Ma Echad, it says, what do you mean one? Vaidna lo Ushmo Echad, who is his name not now already one? Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, he says, lo kolamaze lamaba. No, this world's not like the next world. Olam hazeh, nichtav b'yud v'hei. You know, Hashem's name is written yud kei vav kei. V'nikra v'alef dalet. When we pronounce it, we say ador. That name of Hashem. Aval l'olam haba. When it comes to olam haba, kulo echad. They'll all be. It'll all be one name. Nikra b'yud kei. Yud hei v'nichtav. Yud Hey, we will both read. It will be written Yud Kei Vav Kei, and we'll say it out. The full name, the unpronounceable name. You can't even spell it as out. You know, in four different letters. You can't even. You're not supposed to even say that that way. So that's why we'll say Yud Kei Vav Kei instead of. We're adding in the hay, and therefore what you know, it will be pronounced this way in Olam Haba. We'll say it and the same way that it is written, because obviously Hashem's presence will be expanded, and we'll be able to present in the world that there'll be no distance between us and Hashem. Okay, Sava Rava Lemidrasha Bepirka. Rava wanted to come and give a discussion about this and reveal Hashem's name as it is written and explain to the people how it was done. Amalei Hausava, an elderly person said to him, which is often a reference to Eliyahu Navi, Lo'olam Kativ. It says, that is my name, Zezikri Lo'olam, from Parshat Shmot, when Moshe asked Hashem, what is my name? And Hashem says, this is my name forever, Zezikri Lo'olam, as we're going to see in a second. Yes, Shmi Lo'olam, Zezikri Lo'dor V'dor. Okay, and then we're going to quote that out and quote it in a second. But it says Lo'olam Kativ, where it really it doesn't say, spell it out fully, it means forever. This will be my name forever. Although it leaves out if you wrote Lo'olam out fully, it would have a vav there, and it would be lamed ayin and then vav lamed mem, but the way it's spelled is without the vav, so just lamed ayin lamed mem, and we see that and if we read that word now by itself, also without the vowels, it says la'alem, which means to hide, my name should be hidden. So now Rabbi Avina Rami, so Rabbi Avina says, what about, you know, let's look at that pasuk tiv, zeshmi la'olam, this is my name forever, and as we said, la'alaim, to hide, this should be my name, it should be hidden. Zezikri, l'dor v'dor. But then it says, the next part of the pasuk says, this is my memorial for all generations. So what does that mean? You know, how do you reconcile that? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo kashini niktav ani nikra. He says that my name is not as it is read, as it is written. Okay, it says niktav ani biyud hey. It's written with the yud and hey. V'nikra ani aleph dalet, but it's called aleph dalet. It's read by everyone as it's written with the yud kei and vav kei, but it's read with just an aleph and a dalet. Okay, hadron lach elu ovrin. We have finished the third chapter, which dealt a lot with chametz and nuksha, what is defined and things like that, mixtures of chametz with other foods, etc. And now we move on after the three chapters really on chametz and matzah and stuff like that. Now we actually move on to an issue which we will deal with, which talks about can you work on Erev Pesach? That Erev Pesach is always a very busy day, and you have to do a lot. You have to destroy your chametz. You have to bake the matzah. If you're baking matzah, you have to sacrifice your Korban Pesach, etc. And you have to prepare for the Seder that night. So it's a very busy day. And even though we don't unfortunately have a korbanot to bring today, and we don't bake matzahs as a rule, not at least not our communities bake matzahs, but it still ends up being a very busy day. So there is a discussion whether you should be working on that day at all. So the first Mishnah discusses this, but then most of the chapter is actually going to be a tangent, really, on Pesach itself, is really going to be discussing various minhagim. Okay, so the first Mishnah of the Perek says as follows, Makom shenagu lasot melacha be'aravei Pesachim ad chatzot osin. When there is a minhag to work on Pesach, and or Erev Pesach, until midday, then osin, then you can work. However, Makom shenagu shelo lasot ein osin, when there is a minhag that you shouldn't work on Pesach until even before midday, then you shouldn't work at all. Haleich makom shosin makom sheinosin, a person that in his place they do work, to a place that they don't do work, it says, or vice versa, or makom sheinosin, he doesn't work, his custom is not to work on Erev Pesach, and he goes makom sheosin, that they go to a place that does do work. No, not in love, chumra makom sheyatzemish. They have the stringencies, they put the stringencies on him of both places, the place that he left as well as the place to which he goes, and in other words, so because either he's in a place where they don't do work, even though he in theory at home he does do work, or he himself has the stringency not to work, so he can't work when he gets there, even though other people are working. Okay, and that's it. And now it seems to the Mishnah then says the general principle. V'ali shane adam mibnei machloket. You shouldn't change from the local custom because that is going to engender dispute, and therefore that's problematic. So interestingly, we have to reconcile that with what we just said, because if you go to a place where they doing work and you're not doing work, surely that is going to be creating machloket. So the Gemara will address that I think it's tomorrow's daf. Okay, and similarly, Hamolech Parot Shviet Mekom Shekalu Mekom Shelo Chalu. What happens is, in terms of the Shviet produce, that what you have to do, you're allowed to store some of the produce at home if you have produce that you had from before Shvit, because you're obviously not allowed to go and hoard it on Shvit. So what you do in terms of that is that if you have this produce at home from before Shvit, and now the food runs out of that specific type. For example, if you had apples, there are no more apples on the tree, which we'll get into more of this a bit later, but just the simple understanding, if you've got no more apples on the tree anymore, there's no more stuff in the field, that's what's called it's kalu. If you go to a place where you do have apples on the tree, and you go to a place where they don't have apples on the tree, or makom shelo kalu, or you go to a place that has got apples, and makom shekalu. Sorry, the other way around. If you have apples and you bring from a place where there were no apples, and you come to a place where there are still apples, or you do vice versa, where a place you brought it from a place that has still got apples to a place where there's no more apples in that place, in that those fields, surrounding fields, chayev lavair, you have to do what's known as bir chametz. According to the Rambam, what you have to do is you actually literally have to destroy it, the same way as bir chametz is destroying it. You have to destroy it, that produce. However, most people, other Rishonim, say no, it's not a question of destroying it. You have to make it ownerless. So you have to take all the apples out of your house, put them in a certain place, and say, now these are ownerless. Then, if you want to, you could come and maybe even collect them back yourself, or at least some of them back, leave other people to get them as well. Okay, so really that is... that's what we're talking about. So if you're in all of those places, you have to almost exactly as we said, take on the stringencies over there, and you have to do beer on it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tzav Havai Lecha Af Ata. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you don't have to take it out. You can say to a local prisoner, you go out and bring this produce from where it is. Okay, we'll explain all of that, but not anytime soon. Okay, Ma'iri Arve Pesachim. So Gemara's first question, why do we say that on Erev Pesach you can't work? Afil Arve Shabbatot for Arve Yom Tovim Nami. Even on Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, you're not allowed to work either. The Tanya's, we learned in Rata Osem Racham Erev Shabbat Tot V'yamim Tovim. If you work on Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, Mina Mincha Lamala, from Mincha and onwards, Enrim Siman Bracha Olalam, you'll never see a sign of blessing forever. So now the question is, what, you know, is it Mincha Katana, i.e. around 12:30, or is it Mincha Gedola, which is a much later time? It's, 2.5 hours before Shabbat. Okay, so the way this Gemara seems to say it would be from Mincha Katana. Anyway, I think the Shulchan Aruch brings otherwise, that it's only from Mincha Gedola. Okay, in any case, Enorei Siman Rachel Olam, you never see a sign of blessing. Hatam Mina Mincha Lamala Hud Asu. So the, you know, surely on, you know, so what's the issue? Because surely you bring the Korban from that time as well, the Korban Pesach. And the answer is, so why specifically Erev Pesach can't you work? All other Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, you shouldn't be able to work either. The Gemara's answer, Hatam Mina Mincha Lamala Hud Asu, Samach Le Mincha Lo. That is only from the time of Mincha, i.e. 6.5 hours into the day, but close to Mincha, not. Whereas Hacha Mechatzot, from Erev Pesach, it's even from Chatzot, from 12 o'clock. So all other places, you have to 12:30, assuming you say Mincha Katana, Mincha Gedola, it started off at 12, as opposed to Mincha Katana, which starts, 2.5 hours after that. Okay, so in terms of that, inami hatam simon bracha hu de lo chazi, in terms of Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, it's only bracha that you won't see. Aval shemutai lo ma shem tinan, but we don't put you in excommunication for such behavior. They don't stop you and excommunicate you for that. Hacha shemutai nami ma shem tinan lai, in Erev Pesach, they would actually even excommunicate you if you defied them and did malacha. Okay, Gufa, going back to what we saw, how say Menachem, Arve Shabbatot, Arve Yamim Tovim, Mina Mincha Damala, Motzei Shabbat. We see if you do work on Erev Shabbat or Erev Yom Tov from Mincha Tam, and also from Motzei Shabbat, Motzei Yom Tov, or Motzei Yom Kippurim. And if you do it like work before you've said Havdalah and Ma'ariv, after Shabbat, Yom Tov, or Yom Kippur, V'chom Makom, Sheesh Bo Sham, Nid Nud Avera, or where there's some form of Slat Avera, and what is that talking about? Latue Tanit Tibur. That's to include a Tanit Tibur, a days that you would set aside for fasting as a result of the lack of rain, or a Tisha B'Av, etc., where you're told not to do work over there. And or in Siman Bracha Lulam, you'll never see blessing from that work. It's not that you won't make money. You might make money, but then you'll lose it in another place. Okay, so Tana Rabbanan, a similar kind of idea. You can be hard working and that will give you reward. But you can be hard working and lose. You can be lazy and it's good for you. You will get rewarded for that. And you'll be lazy and lose. Okay, what are we talking about? A person that is hard working and he gets rewarded. David Kula Shabbat Tavro Aved Mala Shabbat. A person that works the whole week except for Erev Shabbat. Okay, as we said, from at least from the time of Mincha. So that is a person, a good person. He works all the time, but then from Mincha Shabbat, Erev Shabbat, he stops working. So that's a good thing to do. Zarek Venisad, a person that is hard working, but he'll lose. David Kula Shabbat, Avid Male Shabbat. He says he works the whole week, and also he works on Erev Shabbat, past Mincha time. So, you know, he's working hard the whole week, but he's going to lose as a result of working when he shouldn't be working. It says, Ein Rosh Siman Bracha Olalam. Okay, so you'll lose that, at least that. Okay, Shafal V'Nizkar, someone who's lazy, will still get to work. Delo Avid Kula Shabta, he doesn't work the whole week at all, including Velo Avid Malav Shabta, and he doesn't work on a Shabbat, Erev Shabbat afternoon either. So you can be lazy the whole week, so you get rewarded for that, even though because you're not even doing any work the whole week. So, you know, what's the point in saying you get rewarded for not working on Erev Shabbat? Still, we say that is the Kiddush. You'll still get rewarded, as we'll discuss in a moment. Shavav and Nifsad, a person who is lazy and will lose. Adlo Avid Kula Shabta, Avid Mala Shabta. The person's got everything in, you know, upside down. And he says he doesn't work the whole week, but all of a sudden, Erev Shabbos, Mincha time, he suddenly starts working. That person is really not doing well. Amar Rava, and Rava says, Hani Nashay de Mechoza. And he says, even these women of Mechoza, Afagav, Adlo Avdinin, Avidata, Demala Shabta, he says they're very pampered and they never do any work and they don't do work, even though they don't do work the whole week, never mind on Erev Shabbat. It says from Mincha, Mishum, Mafkanuta, who, because they are so pampered and Mufunak is someone that's very delicate. It says, "Hi, call your mate, and I'm look I've done." He says, even though the whole week they don't do any work, filuhachi shafal v'niskar kerin lu, we still call them lazy, but we'll get reward, even though they're not doing it for, you know, the right intention. And once we talk about that, Rava says, "Ketiv ki gadol ala shemaim chastecha." It says on one pasuk in Tehillim, Psalm 56. Seven says your mercy is great until the heavens. Okay, until the heavens. Ad, you know, the Allah Shemaim, Ad Hashemaim. Okay, Ugativ, and then afterward in another thing you see, Kedom Al Hashemaim Chastecha, and then in Psalm 108 says that it's greater than the heavens. Okay, so how do you say that? Kan Osim Lishma, that if you know, how do you understand that? Why is it one only until the heavens, one's greater than the heavens? So we say, kan bosim nishma, if you do something for the right reasons, for its no ulterior motives, for the sake of the mitzvah itself, then it will be higher than the heavens. Kan bosim shelo nishma, if you do it for, you know, some kind of ulterior motive, that you still get rewarded, but only until the heavens, not above. Rav Yehuda, famous statement, Rav Yehuda, Dama Rav Yehuda, Amarav, in the name of Rav, Olam Yaskin, Tera Adam, but Torah and Mitzvot, Af Shelo Lishma, Shemitoch Shelo Lishma, Balishma. A person should get involved with Torah and Mitzvot, even if it isn't for it specifically for its own sake, because you, once you start doing it, you'll eventually come, you know, even though you're doing it for the wrong and ulterior motive, you'll come and do it for the right motives in the end. So it will bring you towards the right thing. There's another Gemara that discusses this and says, if you do it for the wrong thing, it's better that you didn't come into the world. And the reconciliation for that is because if you do it and you learn a lot in order to become argumentative and show that you've got intellectual skills and to beat other people, you know, in terms of that is totally incorrect intention, and therefore that's why it's better that you never came into the world for that. All right, and, you know, not directly related in terms of Pesach, but talking about seeing brocha in things, seeing brocha in your work. Tan Rabbanan, Hatameh Leschar Ishto, if you send your wife out to work, it says, Ishto Verachaim, your wife or mill, you won't see signs of blessing. What are we talking about? Enorosim Ibrachal Olam, Leschar Ishto, if you send your wife out to work in a public place, mat kulta, where she spins thread for others and she weighs it on a scale. Number one, it's not a very profitable work. It's very, and also you're demeaning her. She exposes her arms in public, etc. Verachaya, and in terms of a mull, what is that talking about? Agarta, if you you know that people rent a small little mull and they do a little bit of work and they return it to you. It's not a highly profitable business venture. Aval avda mazabna, if a woman does work at home and she's fully entitled to sell that, it says if you do that, it says ishta buche mishtabach, but then she can be praised. The pasuk says ba'kra diktiv sadim astavatimkor, as we say in Asher Chayil, she made a cloak and she sells it. Okay, so that is part of thing, and we don't have a problem with the a woman doing work like that. Okay, look, she's doing it in private and she sells, then there's that lack of Simon Brocha, it won't apply to that. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a brata, Mr. Kair, Bekanim, over Kankanim, if you deal with rods or jugs, okay, and when Simon Brocha Lalam, you'll never see signs of blessing. Why? Ma Taima, Kavan, the Nefishe, Af Chaze Zaitu, what happens is they're very bulky and stuff, and people are seeing them the whole time. Shelter behu aina. The reason is people look at them and they get they say, oh, you know, this guy, oh, he's doing so well, etc. They put an iron horror on him. Similarly, Tanrabanan Tagrei Simta Magadla Bahema Daka, these merchants who sell what they're selling in an alleyway, a Simta right close to the Rishut Harabim, the people who raise these small little animals like goats and sheep, etc., that go out and eat other people's fields. It says, "Kot to say ilanot tovot," and people who chop down good trees, fruit trees. I mean, Tim, you know, even though you could be allowed to do so, it says anyway. But you know, the reasons of baltashkit, etc. But assuming you're allowed to do so, even if you chop them down, we'll see that included in the following thing. And a person always looks to take the best part. If you're sharing something with someone and you always end up taking the best part of it, then enorin siman brachol olam, you'll never see a sign of blessing. Why am I tama? The tahu by enshi. People are very surprised that this, you know, the audacity of this person. You know, that if you're doing it right in full view of everyone and taking the best part or selling things right close to Rishut HaRavim and destroying other people's fields with your small animals, etc., and you're chopping down fruit trees, people look at you and are amazed by you, and therefore, you know, that causes judgment against you in terms of this these things. Okay, Tana Rabbanan, more about this. Arba Prutot Ein Bahem Siman Brachol Olam, you'll never see blessing out of four different amounts of money. Okay, in other words, if you are busy with this money, if you get wages from these things, these you'll never see blessing from them. What is that? Skar Kotvin, the skar of scribes. Okay, which we'll define in a bit. Skar Maturgamin, a person who interprets for a rabbi. The rabbi was used to speak in a soft voice to these people, and then these people used to amplify to explain what's going on, what the rabbi is intending to say, and that's what he does. Amplifies what the rabbi says. The Skari Tomim, if you are busy and a guardian of this orphans' funds, it says Moot Habaot Midinat Hayam, and the money that comes from a place overseas. Okay, you are like an importer and you bring in stuff from overseas. That is not a good siman. So let's understand this. Bishlam Askar Maturgaminen, these Maturgamans, these interpreters for the rabbis, we can understand why. Mishum the Mekse Kaskar Shabbat. It looks like they are getting money for working on Shabbat. Meanwhile, they do it during the whole week as well, but people only see this mat probably on Shabbat. They only have the time on Shabbat to come and listen. They hear the Meturgaman and they say, oh, how come he's getting paid this for doing this on Shabbat? Mo'ot, Yotomim, the same thing with these Yotomim. These orphans, you are, you know, the guardian of their funds. It says, love, you might take a drop extra in terms of that, and the orphans do not forgive you for that extra amount that you take, even inadvertently, unwillingly, etc. And still, so therefore, you're defined as a thief in terms of that. You never see blessing from that. Mo'ot, habot, mimidinat hayam, and you are importing things from overseas. Mishum delo, kol yoma, not every day are you going to have miracles happen to you that your ship does not get sunk and stuff like that, and therefore if it does arrive, you should be very thankful, because that miracles don't happen every day. But going back to the first thing, Ella Skar Kotfin, my time in terms of the wages that you'll get for writing tefillin and mezuzot, why don't you see blessing in that? Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, he says, Ishrim Baba Taniot, Yashvi Anshei Knesset Hagadola, the Anshei Knesset Hagadola had 24 fasts, probably corresponding to the 24 books of the Torah. It says, Al Kitfa Yisraim Tefillin and Mezuzot, the people that write what's known as Stam, Sefer Torah, Tefillin and Mezuzot, Shelo Yitasher, that these people doing it should not become rich. If they would become rich from selling these things, Ain Kutfim, they'd say, listen, that's enough, I don't need more. And then they would stop writing, and that would be bad. So what the rabbi said, rather what should happen is that you shouldn't see a blessing in it, and therefore you'd have to keep on writing, because then there'd be an abundance of these things. Tan Rabbanan, HaKot Vesfarim, Tfilin and Mezuzot, if you write these Sefer Torah, Tfilin and Mezuzot, Hain, Matam Gaim them, and the people that they sell to, the merchants and their merchants, right, and everyone that is v'chol skin, but melechet shemayim, anything that people that are involved in earning, you know, dealing with items that are defined as melechet shemayim, the work of heaven, latue mochrei tchelit, and you know that includes those who are making tchelit. Einam rim simel bracha lolam, they won't see a blessing in their labor. However, the Gemara qualifies this im uskim lishma. If they do it lishma roin, well then they will see blessing. So it really is up to the sofer. If he does lishma, well then he's got a chance of seeing bracha. All right, it's a pretty good place to stop over there, because now we're going to be talking about different people's customs and what the rabbi said about these different people's customs. As we mentioned, probably not much to do with Pesach, although it does come up. Okay, everyone should have a great day.